I try to not be productive enough amount of time, because we live in a vector world where the direction of the vector matters a hell of a lot more than the velocity. Velocity matters too, by the way, but direction matters too. So there's a healthy portion of time I'm not productive. I'm not doing anything. I'm just thinking, following my curiosity, and then setting up the right conditions where naturally you're working for the true and the right reasons. It is actually insanely gratifying to provide to the world what you're really good at, to do your best work. It's like setting up a condition where you're rolling down a hill. You just find the right hill to roll down on. That's task number one. And then you set off the rolling motion. The rest, life takes care of itself. So you put in the right defaults. You hang around people who care about doing something important. You spend time with people talking about what's actually going to happen to the future of the world and living in the future almost.
Hello and welcome. I am your host Pratish Sanyal, and you're listening to the 1% Project. Conversations that will help you understand how some of the smartest minds build, scale and operate new ideas and ventures. If you enjoy these conversations, do share and subscribe. What changes after becoming a billionaire? How does one maintain a sense of purpose and drive after accumulating wealth? Welcome to the 1% Project, where we continue our captivating conversation with Prasanna, the co-founder of Rippling and a trailblazer in the world of technology and entrepreneurship. In our first episode, we discovered Prasanna's early successes, his coding prowess, and his ability to identify and seize opportunities. We explored his insights on building and optimizing for pace and efficiency, as well as his views on the future of crypto. In part two of our conversation, we dive deeper into Prasanna's extraordinary life, understand how his world transformed after achieving billionaire status, the profound influence of Paul Graham's writing on his thinking, and the unique superpowers that have propelled him to great heights. He also shares his book recommendations, unveils his thoughts on productivity, providing counterintuitive insights on how to make the most of your time and achieve remarkable results. Subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to it, and sign up for the 1% Project's Think newsletter at 1%.live, which brings highly curated content that adds value to your professional and personal life. Stay till the end, where I summarize the key takeaways from this conversation with Prasanna. Has life changed after becoming a self-made billionaire?
It has changed a lot in certain ways, not a lot in other ways. It has definitely changed a lot in the sense that I can now make the bar for a bet, the bar for where I spend my time on has gone up quite a bit. I don't do almost anything that I dislike at this point. The bar has changed quite a bit on the use of my time and on ambition, on what you want to like bet your time and money on, and the scale at which you want to do things. The bar has gone up quite a bit. And it struck me in a weird way. On one hand, I was very obsessed about making a lot of money. I just hate this idea of having to work, having to trade my time for money. I really hated that idea. I was like very bad at taking orders, that I really wanted to make a lot of money from a very young age. On the one hand, like suddenly when I have $1 billion, all that comes into question. I didn't come into this space to make $1 billion. I came here to make fuck you money. It's just like few million dollars. I overshot by quite a margin. And now that I realize, okay, there is no way my lifestyle is going to spend anywhere close to the money that I've accumulated. There's just no way. And the benefit of being in the YC network is you've seen a lot of other people go through this journey, and you've seen them try out, grapple with these existential questions. For example, Sam Altman, you know, once he's made a lot of money, he's one of the best investors in the world. Once he's made a lot of money, he's gay, so he's not having kids. He wasn't having kids either. Then you start to think about, okay, why make more at all? Like the original goal has been accomplished. Then at some point you think, okay, maybe I should just give it away. What are you going to do with all this money? And then you realize, not all, but some realize that this charity thing is nonsense. It's not changing the world. These are temporary band-aids. It's not fundamental technical wealth creation. it's zero sum in a lot of ways. Your left hand used to the right hand. It's not like a permanent solution to things. And the quality of brain power is very poor. You made your capital with highest caliber, highest IQ people who had systems thinking, and then you want to take all this capital and give it to allocate to like very poor IQ people who are often just like ideologically driven. They don't even see the results. There is no market feedback. So for a lot of those reasons, like I think charity just doesn't work for a lot of tech wealthy people. And then it comes back to, okay, most profitable companies are also the best nonprofits. There's a weird intersection. OpenAI started as a nonprofit. He just, like Sam Altman, would funnel all his wealth and burn it on fire on OpenAI. That was his sort of thing, where he's going to give away all his wealth. And then it turned out to be one of the most successful companies in history. So you end up in the cycle where Elon did the SpaceX. You know, SpaceX is supposed to be the money-burning dumpster fire that Elon charitably donates to take us to Mars. And that turned out to be one of the most valuable companies in history. So in a weird way, at some point, you realize, okay, you just want to bet it, put it back on the line. You don't need much to live. And now you think in grander scales. In some way, you realize, okay, this is all a game. This is all like a scorecard in some weird way. And capitalism is a game where the world thinks, because you created a lot of impact, because you created a lot of net positives to the world, it gives you a lot more resources to do it again the next time. It's an opportunity, a blessing, a responsibility in a lot of ways. And it's okay if you blow it up. There's no way you're going to spend it all anyway. So now the job is to make bigger bets and have more fun doing it.
You have had a lot of influence from Paul Gamm's writing. You have strong belief about Six Sigma principles and first principles. So how has all of this played a role in your life?
I've been fortunate to get to the center of action where a lot is happening in the world. I'm also fortunate to be in a time where a lot is happening in the world. This is not like a normal time. Only once in a few hundred years, you live in a time like this. The previous such time this happened is like early 1900s, where people invented the steam engine, and it was immediately followed that you could channel energy into all kinds of things, and it created cars, trains, telegraph, and electric appliances, and aeroplanes, and so on and so forth. That just created an explosion of transformation in the world. And then similarly, right now, it is creating an explosion that is far more deeper, where I would argue, like human beings excelled because they invented language. We could all learn from each other's experiences. But now we've accelerated that by connecting all our brains at the speed of light using this thing called the internet. So now we almost share like a collective high bandwidth brain. And that is just creating exponents on a lot of the traditional technologies like nuclear fusion and so on. So a lot of things are breaking thanks to the internet. I'm lucky to be alive at that time. I'm also lucky to have accumulated the skills to play at the center of this battle, which is happening in a very computer science centric manner on the internet. And crypto is like one of the biggest drivers going forward. So I've been very fortunate where it's like being amongst a select few who can play this battle. It's Alexander the Great. If Alexander was born today, what game will he be playing? He would be like the Mark Zuckerberg playing the internet. I'm fortunate to be in that battlefield. And it's also a portion of extreme privilege. Like Alexander was born to the son of a king. Not everyone could have played that battle. Like most people in the world who were alive at that time could not even compete with Alexander. So he happened to be one of the smartest amongst this tiny 1,000 people who he competed with. And he was able to take over the world. It's a privilege to be an early participant of this YC network as well. Anyone who was around at the time when I was around has gotten stupendously rich. Like just insane amount of wealth got created around that small place. I just find it fascinating, first of all, that one of the insane movies are playing out in my lifetime. And it's just fascinating to watch regardless. And then on top of it, to be able to have the skill sets to play in that and to participate and change the outcome of the movie is just like a blessing.
Actually, the example of Alexander the Great is amazing because I think his father, who was a king, as you mentioned, doesn't get any credit for what he had imbibed into Alexander the Great. Whatever Alexander the Great actually accomplished, his plans were actually put in motion by his father. But again, marketing and history makes only one hero. And that basically comes back to the environment that we are born in. And every 5 years, there's a transformation.
Right.
There are two ways of looking at it. One, that every transformation brings you a lot of challenges because you need to upgrade your skill sets, or you may run out of a job or money or whatever. On the other hand, as you mentioned, in your mindset, it's an opportunity to play a bet. And that may work and that may not work.
Totally, totally. I also mean, once you step out of the matrix, you're always like a little bit confused about this narrative that people are like, hey, I might lose my job. I need to upgrade my skill set. I've always been fairly confused about that. And once I've made these bets like repeatedly, there were points in time where I had little to no money. I had $10,000 in my bank account, I'm putting $5,000 into Bitcoin. And it's almost confusing to me, why not? Why don't people do that? And if you zoom out long enough in the arc of human history, it's like, what's actually going to happen? Okay, let's say Bitcoin blows up. I have only $5,000 now. Let's talk about, am I going to run out of food? Not really. I don't see a possibility of that. Humanity has invented farming and there is enough food for everyone to go around. Am I going to run out of clothes? Not really. Like early humans wore only one or two clothes. There was a point in time where they just made clothes out of like leaves and stuff. And that was their clothes for like years. We've solved the food, shelter, clothing. Like we're not going to run out of that. Like we are in excess of that. So it's always, would they have imagined? Would the early prehistoric humans have imagined in a world of abundant food and shelter and clothing, we would be thinking about, what if I get put out of a job? Would we be thinking about like, how do I upgrade my skill set to stay relevant? That is crazy. Like, why would you do that? You don't need to do any of that stuff. You don't need a job. Like, the world is going to feed you. So it's insane how much that basic understanding of the larger picture of human arc of history is absent from the matrix. And I don't fully understand why. Certainly people wouldn't have predicted this is the way it would have evolved. The need for safety somehow created some meta programs in our brain. Of course, if a lion is going to hunt you, you shouldn't die. So those things put in some programs in our amygdala, which created the matrix. Which from a foundational constraints perspective, we evolved way past that, but we're still stuck to the reptilian programs. Those vestiges seem to be fairly powerful. It's not dominating like some 10% of the human population. It's dominating our popular culture, like 99% of the population. And only the 0.1% are truly doing what we've been freed to do. If you don't need any of this stuff, if all your needs are taken care of, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to be an adventurer, explorer. You're supposed to push the limits of human knowledge. And most of the world is still in the COP territory, just maintaining status quo. And they're worried about change and disruption. It's insane. They were born because of a story of change.
That's fascinating. Actually, I have an example of juggling. The best jugglers, or the jugglers who really become good at juggling balls or knives, are the ones who focus on keeping the knives or the balls in the air rather than having the fear that they will drop. The ones who pick up juggling naturally and the fastest are the ones who are not thinking about, am I going to drop it? Because the ones who are thinking about, I'm going to drop it, are the ones who never learn and stay in the fear sector. But the ones who think about just keeping and figuring out the techniques, how to keep it in the air, they don't care if it falls 100 times.
Right.
What they care about is that my core objective is to keep it going in the air and probably adding many more objects while I'm juggling.
Nice.
So what is your superpower?
I think the biggest one is just having a good taste and to identify what are the big changes that are happening in the world and just following that with curiosity. I enjoy that a lot. I really enjoy finding the butterfly flap that's going to create the tornado.
Three books that have influenced you the most, books or blogs?
Obviously, PG's blogs were very influential early on. They changed my perspective of things. And then post that, I enjoyed like Mark Andreessen's blogs when he was really young into the internet. Those were fascinating reads. That sort of definitely changed my perspective. And then the upgrade on that I got was like when Peter Thiel 0-1 came out, that was just like a much bigger zoom out. If PG is micro on startups, Mark Andreessen has a little bit zoom out on high growth companies and the economy in general. Peter is like a zoom out on culture and human life and how change happens. That is just eye-opening for me, like 0-1 changed my life. I mean, there are also a couple of other books which are like, which have influenced me, like Taleb's books around asymmetry, asymmetric bets. I've been very influential. I came across them back in college and they've stuck with me. The one sort of less known one, which I think is super underrated, is a book by this Indian dude called Basant Maheshwari. It's called The Thoughtful Investor. And this is a guy out of Calcutta who made his fortunes in the stock market, started with absolutely nothing. And I didn't expect to learn a lot because he doesn't even speak fluent English. But the book was fascinating because the way he made his wealth is by betting continually on the next important bubble. And that's how you make the 10x, 50x, 100x on a stock. And he's doing this in the public markets. So it's even more fascinating. And so that was the really good zoom out around what changes societies, what creates pessimism to moderate realism to extreme optimism. And then if you ride this curve, you can make generational wealth. So his frameworks for how to think about that are actually very contrary. I don't still see it in any one of the works out there. So it's uniquely Indian and he's done it a few times. So I think that was very fascinating. The book, The Thoughtful Investor, was fairly fascinating to me as well.
That's on my Amazon list right away after this call. 3 productivity tools, hacks that you use.
One is I try to not be productive enough amount of time because we live in a vector world where the direction of the vector matters a hell of a lot more than the velocity. Velocity matters too, by the way, but direction matters too. So there's a healthy portion of time I'm not productive. I'm not doing anything. I'm just thinking, following my curiosity, and then setting up the right conditions where naturally you're working for the true and the right reasons. It is actually insanely gratifying to provide to the world what you're really good at, to do your best work. It's like setting up a condition where you're rolling down a hill. You just find the right hill to roll down on. That's task number one. And then you set off the rolling motion, the rest life takes care of itself. So you put in the right defaults. You hang around people who care about doing something important. You spend time with people talking about what's actually going to happen to the future of the world and living in the future almost, like PG calls it. So those set up good defaults. The things that drive me to do anything, because I don't need to do anything at this point, for a while, like money was the driver. I wanted to make it big and all that. At this point, things that drive me are like, the video game model, which is like, life doesn't have a purpose, there is no grand meaning, it's all a grand, beautiful video game. You get to play a few lives and you want to maximize your thrill of what is actually happening. So that sort of keeps me grounded. That gives me a reason to wake up in the morning and do something. What is the most interesting way by which I can fuck up the world? And then there is the movie theater model, which is also, no matter what I do, there is something amazing happening. You can watch it from the front row seat. What do you want to watch? What is most interesting? What is the most interesting butterfly flap that people are not noticing that they will notice down the line? So it is just fascinating to play that prediction game and find the truth. And then lastly, it's the great work model, which is just, what am I really good at? What can I give to the world to the best of my abilities? So those keep me grounded and motivated.
3 moments that have defined your career.
I think the big breakthrough moments in my life are like, winning the Google Code Jam and being number one in India when I was 18, like that gave me insane amount of confidence that, hey, listen, maybe I'm really good at this stuff. I am just like very special. That sort of increases the amount of years of delayed gratification you're willing to go for, willing to be misunderstood for. You know, at a point, you crave to be misunderstood. And then the next big thing, obviously, was Y Combinator. Moving to the Valley and being a part of this massive trend where the center of the world was moving from New York to the Silicon Valley, and I was early and right to the trend, and I was also actually at the center of the center, which was Y Combinator, which was fairly underrated at that time, and it created insane amount of wealth and change to the world. So I think YC was the second biggest defining moment of my life. And then finally, I'm going to skip the most obvious one, which is obviously Rippling. Rippling made me $1 billion, and it was fairly obvious. We spoke about why. And then beyond that, like right now, I think it's crypto. Crypto is the new YC, and that's fairly early to that. In fact, believe it or not, I made my first liquid $1 million in crypto. not Rippling. I think crypto is a new YC, and I think that's the next big career-changing move for me.
And before we close, what advice will you give to your younger self?
First of all, I'm super glad and thankful for how things have turned out. Like, you couldn't have asked for a lot different. Like, the growth has been insane. I would say maybe just these mental models, if I knew earlier on and had a lot more conviction on, I could have been a little less fearless, a little more fearless, and a little less nerve-wracking. At some point, you get desensitized to the highs and lows. So I do enjoy the highs and lows that I went through early on in my career. But it's okay. I think it is hard to believe. But people told me at the time, like Nawal told me at the time, that this old adage is actually true. Be careful what you wish for in your 20s. For it shall be granted in your 30s. It's totally true. I didn't believe it, but there are only a handful of people who wish for the same thing consistently over a decade or so, and they tend to get it.
Brilliant. Prasanna, that's a great place to close this conversation. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, man. Cheers.
I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Prasanna. Here are the three takeaways from this conversation. Number one. When one accumulates a certain amount of wealth, they recognize the inherent limitations of spending. That is when the focus shifts towards making bigger and better bets and finding enjoyment in the process. This change in mindset reveals the game-like nature of capitalism, presenting an opportunity, blessing, and responsibility to generate impactful outcomes for the world. Number two. One should consciously allow oneself to have some period of non-productivity. It gives one time to think, follow curiosity, and create the right conditions for putting in the best work. In productivity, the direction of one's efforts matters more than the velocity. And number three, one should be careful of what one wishes in their 20s, for it shall be granted in their 30s. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with someone who will find it valuable. For any recommendations and feedback, you can drop me a line at pritish@1%.live. Until next time. You can find the show notes for this episode and every other episode on 1%.live. If you enjoyed this conversation, share it on social media and leave a review. See you next time.